Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Glad you're with us today. A lot of you have probably heard me explain this before, but I'll explain it again because I always do. That the goal of Central Coast Voices is really to bring you credible, valid information and insights about diverse things going on in our community, diverse parts about it, diverse individuals. And that's really why we're here. We want to address really what amounts to what today's choices do to affect today's community, tomorrow's community, and how long-term ramifications are of what we do affect us and our community as a whole. Sometimes we think about how they affect us, but we don't think about how they affect our neighbors, and that's very important to know. This program is a program sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities, which is an arm of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. And it is a call-in program. And the phone number is 805-781-3875. And you're welcome to call in and be part of the discussion. Today we are going to talk about something that that we probably all know about, but we may not, in a lot of cases, have a realistic view of what it is, why it's important to pay attention to it, and what's going on in our community. We're going to talk about cardiovascular diseases, heart disease, strokes, heart attacks, all kinds of things. Basically, heart attacks and strokes are the number two and the number three causes of death in San Luis Obispo County. Those don't necessarily fit with national statistics, and we'll talk about that a little later on. But really, there's a lot of experts in this field, and I have some of them with me today. I have Chris Porterfield. He's an MD. He's a board-certified cardiovascular disease specialist, and he's a subspecialist in electrophysiology, and we'll have to get an explanation of what that is at some point, too. Jocelyn Skelton, she is probably a real frontline individual in this, and it's a great opportunity to have her with us because her daughter, Charlie, was born with something called hypoplastic left heart syndrome. And I have to frankly say that was a particular heart disease that I had not heard of until I was introduced to Jocelyn, so we will find out more about that today. And Emily Renault, she is the director of the Heart Walk for San Luis Obispo County's Heart Association and involved in a lot of other aspects of what's going on with the Heart Association. We did have a guest from French Hospital who was going to be with us, and some complications came up for them not to be with us today, so we thank you from that standpoint. I mention that because sometimes people then send us notes afterwards and say, the list of guests that you talked with were not the ones that I heard off of the program notes before that were going to be there, so it's always good to share that. We are talking about a serious problem in our lives and a serious health issue that seems to get dealt with, in my opinion, in the category of everybody knows about it, everybody's aware that it affects an awful lot of us, and all of us are aware that it or believe that it's not going to get to us and we can just kind of ignore it and push it away. So we're going to talk today about a lot of aspects of that. And I'm glad that Jocelyn was with us also today because she's going to be able to talk to us about an aspect of cardiovascular issues that we have maybe not thought about. And for most of us who are not involved in this as a profession, have no idea exists. And that is that there's a tremendous number of heart conditions and complications that don't come at us the way we think about them. They are not based on heart attacks. They're not based on high blood pressure. They're not based upon having a stroke. In the case of her daughter, Charlie, this was something that was came with birth. And I guess, Josh, I'm going to start with you because I really want to get some sense of that, because there's an awful lot of this that for some people is going to be revisiting things that they already know about. Mm-hmm. So tell me how this manifests in your life, what's going on with your daughter, and what in the world is this particular condition?
Well, I think for us, really when you think about heart disease, you think about elderly people or even my dad wasn't even old when he got his first heart attack. So I shouldn't even say that. But you don't think about children is maybe how I should say that a little bit nicer.
Thank you. I was 60 when I had a heart attack.
Yeah, right? So, yeah, the older generation, maybe I should put it that way. But there – congenital heart defects in children is actually the number one birth defect. It's also the number one killer of infants and children, and people don't realize that. It kills more children than all childhood cancers combined. It is not something that is genetic. They still are trying to figure out what it is. So under this huge umbrella of congenital heart defects comes one of the conditions that my daughter was born with, which was hypoplastic left heart syndrome, which means she's missing the left side of her heart. So at just 6 days old, she had her first open heart surgery. And it was during this time that we were really introduced to the heart community, how to be heart healthy, and how serious it is on all levels, not just for the older generations, that it really can affect children as well. So that's why we got involved in the American Heart Association, in order to teach people about heart health, about congenital heart defects, and mainly to educate them on making sure that they're going through the proper steps when they first find out that they're pregnant, to know of a heart defect, how to talk to your doctor about finding out if your child has a heart defect, and even signs after your child is born. 1/3 of children are diagnosed in utero with a heart defect. 1/3 are diagnosed right after birth up into childhood, and another 1/3 is not diagnosed until after it's too late and they've passed.
Okay, I guess this is probably the issue that if we don't get it out here and on the table, I'm going to get moms and parents who are going to scream at me later on. Mm-hmm. How is Charlie doing?
Charlie,
what is the prognosis and what has been involved? How old is Charlie?
So Charlie just turned a year old on July 1st. Okay. So she is 14 months old. She has had 2 open heart surgeries, a pacemaker as well. And she is right now very happy and healthy as we can ask for her with this condition. You would never know if you saw her on the street that she only had half of a heart. We will have another open heart surgery in her future, probably around the age 2, in between 2 and 3, and several catheterization procedures. We have another one coming up next week.
Okay, so her long-term goal is basically just to do things that will accommodate a normal life with this half a heart.
Correct. So it's right now it's a 3-part surgery where they actually rearrange her heart for that the right side to do all the work. So it not only oxygenates, but it also pumps throughout the body. So they don't build her a left heart or anything like that. They're literally changing the function of her heart in order for it to do both the tasks of the right and the left side. This is something that was new. 30 years ago, had it have been me that was born with this, I probably wouldn't be here today. So it's a new technology. It's amazing how far, medicine has come in 30 years. So we're looking at, let's get Charlie to 30 and see where the medical miracles okay. are then. Hopefully we'll have her tell she's old and gray and, so it's just as a family, you just kind of know that it's not necessarily about the destination. It truly is about the journey. And so, that's where we've just embraced every day and been thankful for, every moment we get with her.
Yeah, you've learned a lot in 14 months.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Okay. More than I want to know about the heart, to be quite honest with you. In fact, I've learned that I need to become heart healthy.
Okay. Well, the one missing question here is, was this a condition that you were aware of before she was born, or until birth there was really no way to specifically tell what was going on?
We were here in San Luis at a routine anatomy ultrasound scan when we were told that it looked like Charlie was missing part of her heart. We were not completely diagnosed until we went down about 10 days later down to Children's Hospital Los Angeles, where we were actually diagnosed with hypoplastic left heart. I will tell you this. I had no idea how many children are born with a congenital heart defect each year until we were given that diagnosis. I had no idea how many children lose their battle with congenital heart defects until after I had had Charlie, or, you know, after we had found out about Charlie's condition. And it was then that I realized that as a parent, that my main goal is to find research funds to help our children that were diagnosed with congenital heart defects, as well as spread awareness.
Wow. Okay. So we don't need to worry about whether or not we have enough information about that. You're a vast storehouse.
I try to be.
my thought going into this was, lots of times parents with young children, it takes them years to get any kind of sense of what's going on. So I thank you for having that much information about it. And obviously that's one reason why the Heart Association invited you and talk to us about you being part of this program. So I thank you for that.
Thank you.
Let me remind our listeners again that this is a call-in program. We're talking about the Heart Association, cardiovascular issues. And obviously, if you can tell from Jocelyn's first comments, we will try and make it as informative and as lightly interesting as we can on a very serious topic. But we would like you to be part of the discussion, too. This is Public Radio KCBX. It's Community Radio KCBX. We want you to be part of the community also, not just as a listener. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. I'm going to jump into bothering Dr. Porter, Chris, with a little bit of backstory. It's not a secret that I had a heart attack about 5.5 years ago. It was a startling experience. It didn't feel like a heart attack. All I knew is I woke up about 5:30 in the morning and life was not good. I will, for full disclosure, Chris has shared with me that he basically is in practice in a rather large practice of cardiologists that includes my cardiologist, who's Dr. Doria. I mention that only because it feels kind of in the category of we don't want to have any kind of under-the-table secrets of who we're talking about. But I bring that up, among other things, because I'll tell you, when I got to French Hospital, by the way, I never lost consciousness, which is really good because I'm an information junkie, and that was very, very good for two reasons. Number one, I knew I was going to live, or thought I was going to live, and I did. And I was able to pay attention to what was going on, and my wife said, oh, my God, he's going to just have stories for years, and why don't they just put him out? Anyway, but no, When I got to French Hospital, I believe about 6:45 or 7 o'clock in the morning, I have to share with you that Dr. Doria was putting in – he was finishing up his first stent that he put in someone about an hour earlier, and I believe they turned him around when he was going home to get cleaned up for the workday and said, we have another one coming in right now. So I was his two-for-two that day. I mention that because I really would like to get a sense of how you as a physician face this. I mean, it's an everyday occurrence to you. I mean, I've had one a heart attack. I don't want to have any more. We can talk about what I'm doing to not have any more later on. But you face this every day. And let's be candid, you face it sometimes with patients who don't make it out of the hospital.
Correct.
How do you look at this?
You know, so heart disease is very common. In healthcare workers who see it every day, we are very, you know, we're like, when are we going to have a heart attack? When is our time coming? So a lot of us either overcompensate or, you know, try to do things on a healthy manner to try to reduce our risk. But for the vast majority of people, we really need to understand our own risk. So understanding your personal risk of a heart attack and really understanding what places you at a certain risk and what is modifiable. What can you change to reduce your risk? And so as like anyone else, you know, even as a physician, I look at my parents, I look at my family and say, you know, what are their risks? What can they modify? What can they do to change? But yeah, we see this all the time. We see patients with heart disease numerous times on a daily basis. Those that have made it through it, those that have had complications from these, you know, from these heart attacks, and then try to modify their treatment to get them better. But the, you know, my entire goal is prevention. So preventing you from getting to the hospital. So stopping all the processes that are going on that got you there in the first place. So if we could roll back time 10 years before your heart attack and make changes, some of them are things that, you know, maybe we couldn't have done anything about. But there could have been some factors that we could have changed or done. And that's what the American Heart Association's goal is now. We've really gone from the, you know, aggressive secondary treatments of getting your cholesterol lower after the heart attack to really primary prevention, where we're talking about exercise, diet, modifying your risks, and things like that.
Yeah. Good intro to me bringing Emily into the discussion now, because Emily, as I look at some of the notes that we got from and some information we got from you and the Heart Association, one of the key misconceptions, and I think a lot of us have had that, is that, hey, heart disease runs in my family. There's not a doggone thing I can do about it. I'm in trouble. And it's not going to. There's not a way to fix this. And that, to some extent, was my perception in a lot of ways. My mother died of a heart attack. The good news is she died of a heart attack at 86. The bad news is my father died of a heart attack, and he died of a heart attack at 63. And so there is this, and my both of my grandparents died of strokes that were related to high blood pressure. The general feeling was it doesn't matter whether or not I eat tofu or I eat ice cream, this is going to get me. It's not going to work out, and that's what an awful lot of people view. Now maybe there are those of us who view that only because it's a sense of denial. I can tell you it's a sense of denial that's gone, because in June of 2011, I was real clear about that was not where things were supposed to go. But how do we address that, and how does the Heart Association address that particular issue?
I mean, because our mission is to build lives free of cardiovascular diseases and stroke. And it's also to build healthier lives. I've always used the example that I had a psychic one time tell me that I was going to live to be 97. I thought, that's great, but I don't want to be unhealthy, right? So we do have tools on one is our Life Simple 7, and it's a website that you can go to where you can take an assessment test, and it can tell you your risks. Actually, we've streamlined it just this year to be – it takes about 5 minutes in order to take this assessment, and it'll give you tips and also reassess you in a couple of months, too, throughout the year.
And that – so what are some of those 7 things that you're looking at?
I know, and I'm going to have to get my cheat sheet. I should know this off of the top. One, of course, thank you, is to stop smoking. That's a huge one. That's the easiest thing. I mean, when you say, well, you know, it runs in my family, there's nothing I can do about it. Well, stopping smoking is a huge, easy thing that you can do to gain several years and healthy years onto your life. Of course, get active, control your cholesterol, eat better, manage your blood pressure, lose weight, and reduce your blood sugar.
If I could interject real quick, I know that 7 years ago when my dad had his series of heart attacks and they looked at him and said, you have 3 arteries that are 99% to 100% clogged, closed. The doctor pretty much said, had it not have been for the fact that he was so healthy, he wouldn't have made it through. And it was the same thing. You know, we have a lot of, you know, obviously heart can, you know, I think every family knows somebody in their family who's had some kind of heart stroke or even a, you know, heart attack, that I think sometimes that even knowing that that's going to happen, well, you want to prepare yourself just the same as you would prepare your home for a flooding or you prepare your life for a disaster. You do the same with your body. You prepare knowing that in order to get through it, you're going to make sure that you're healthy to do so.
Okay. The one statistic that I believe I know, okay, and it may not be a correct statistic, but it's great propaganda, if you will. And I'm not sure if Dr. Doria shared this with me, or the cardiac rehab folks at French Hospital shared this with me. And that was the difference between getting regular exercise after a heart attack. Well, example, if I get regular exercise, which I do, my chance of another heart attack drops by, I believe, 60%. And the key thing was that I don't have to go out and run like mad. I don't have to get in some great regimentation of incredible exercise. I basically go out and walk about 2.5 miles a day.
Correct.
And allegedly, that's as important and as valid as someone who's a runner or someone who does working out at a gym, that basically it's something we should all be able to do, which is just get out and walk.
Correct. Yeah, okay. It's a misnomer is that people think that exercise is you know, riding a bike uphill both ways, or, you know, they really are a marathon.
Good excuse not to do it. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, yeah.
And so, you know, just, and the AHA has guidelines on this. So, you know, 5 days a week of moderate exercise is considered a, and that's just walking, you know, or, you know, more strenuous exercise at least 3 days a week. But it's, walking is really the best thing, because running, you really affect your joints a lot more. So, just walking, and I always tell people, find somebody to walk with, because they make you do it. At least one of you will be motivated on most of the days. And if you have a spouse, it's a good way to grow close to them and really spend more time with them. So,
yeah, that's an amazing. So the statistic of indeed 60% is doable by just adding exercise to it.
Two-thirds. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, people need to pay attention to that. I've been paying attention to it, not as much as I should. But I think that's a big factor, which probably leads us into something that's going on this Saturday. And I didn't mean it necessarily tied to that. But Emily will probably just shoot me if we don't mention the fact that there's a heart walk this Saturday. So why don't you tell us about that? And then I'm kind of off the hook for having to not get in trouble for forgetting to tell us that and running out of time.
Thank you so much. Well, because actually our heart walk, it goes back to our mission of just, we want people to get out physically, be active. And that's one reason we do the heart walk is, you know, because it supports our mission. It is, of course, I have to be honest, one of our most major fundraisers. But what I love about it, because I've been doing fundraising in this area for about 20 years, 5 years with the Heart Association, is that it really does also support the mission. So if you come out and just walk, well, we feel good because we're spreading the word. And it is an educational event as well. So it's Avila at 9 o'clock on Saturday.
Okay. And if people want more information, they can find you. What's your website?
It's sloheartwalk.com.
Okay. So, but if somebody put Heart Association SLO in, they could probably track you down
to Google.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've kind of learned when we talk about it on the program is sometimes complex names of websites don't get found, but simple things on Google seem to help a lot for people to know about. I want to get back to some of the misconceptions, because I think that there's just this general view, and Jocelyn hit on it a lot with regard to her dad and things, and that is there's this feeling, okay, I'm too young to worry about it. People only people who are old have heart conditions. It's not something that comes up very often. And gee whiz, until I'm 65 or 70 and eat too many pizzas, I should be fine. And that's kind of a view that's obviously not very correct. So I guess I'm going to turn to Chris. Chris, what's the youngest patient you've dealt with a heart attack?
In the 30s. And it's, usually, so you have a huge genetic risk usually at that age. But there's usually at least one modifiable risk factor. It's usually diabetes. And if it's type 2, extensive weight loss and exercise can help at least reduce their glycemic problem. So mm-hmm. it can be problematic, but it's age 30 is the lowest age.
Yeah. Okay, well, we do have one caller. Let me go ahead and grab that real quick. And Kate, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. You have a question or comment?
Yeah, sure. This is for Emily. I'm really interested in getting involved in the local American Heart Association, and so I was just wondering what different ways there are for me to get involved and where I could find that My Life check that you mentioned.
Sure. I mean, our volunteers are our lifeblood. Jocelyn is a great example of a great volunteer in this area. Pretty much you can call our office at 805-544-1505 or check out our website, sloheartwalk.com, or just heart.org, and look for our local chapter. Probably a phone call would be the best way to reach all of us, but there are several ways. There's advocacy, being at a health fair booth or a volunteer for Heart Walk. We've got two luncheons in the area, one in SLO in February, the first Friday of the month, and then one in Paso on April the 8th of next year. Mm-hmm. So several ways that you can get involved and volunteer for us.
Thank you. And where did you say that Life Check was?
Actually, it would be on heart.org. lifesimple7.com, and you can actually Google that one too, LifeSimple7 or My Life Check.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for all you're doing.
Okay, thanks for the call, Kate.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Everybody knows this is a problem, a health problem in our community and in our world. And my hunch is sometimes, Emily, that you're because everybody knows about it, people come sometimes ignore it as something that they can make a difference about, I wonder sometimes. And how do you address that kind of concern, this misconception that, oh, you know, sooner or later an awful lot of people are going to die from heart attacks, I can't do anything about it, and I'll just continue to eat more pepperoni pizza.
Well, that is actually, I mean, that's our main focus is research and education. That's actually all of the funds that we raise locally and nationally. Most of them do go into research and education. And education is, I mean, that's exactly it, is when we're out at health fairs or even our events locally, the luncheons, the heart walks, all of these, we always have the educational piece to that too. It's, you know, just like Jocelyn said, I mean, doing radio shows like this too, it's awareness, it's getting that word out there. And of course there are going to still be some people, I mean, I'm fortunate to be talking to you, Fred, that you are embracing this topic, because there are some people with heart attacks, kind of like they might find religion or they might not find religion. It's the same with taking care of their health. They might think, well, it happened, it's going to happen again, there's nothing I can do about it. But there is.
Yeah, I think there's one of the things that that my cardiologist mentioned to me when in the one of the follow-up visits that was really fascinated me, I said, well, how am I doing and what do we need to do differently? He says, no, you're on the right track and you're doing a good job. He says, and he kind of implied that I was doing something that an awful lot of men don't do, and it's a bigger men's problem than a woman's problem, this particular aspect. He said, you actually ended up coming in here with a heart attack to have addressed medically at about 3 heart attacks earlier than I see a lot of patients. And Chris, you may be able to shed some light on that. He implied there's an awful lot of people who have the feeling that I had at 5:30 in the morning and say, oh, it's really bad indigestion, or gee, maybe something's wrong with my heart, but this isn't a heart attack. I haven't just fallen over. And I was surprised to hear that there are that many people who wait till, there may be a better explanation than this, heart attack 3 or 4 before they decide to go to the doctor about it.
Yeah, there are different forms of heart attacks, and we call it angina, where you're having the chest pain, mm-hmm. and the classic symptoms of, you know, I've got jaw pain, chest pain, dreading down my arm. For men. Women don't experience some of those same symptoms, and it can be difficult to assess if you're having a heart attack, or if it's what we call the pre-heart attack, or the symptoms that are, you know, impending doom. But some people will say, oh yeah, this is just really bad, you know, reflux or indigestion. Go to bed, you know, same thing happens the next day, and they just keep putting it off and putting it off until it really gets bad. And that's when they come in with either cardiac arrest or really just are at you know, hanging on by a thread. And it's good that people seek care sooner than later.
Yeah, I was surprised in the discussion that we had that he had implied that for a lot of people, the symptoms of that first heart attack pass and may not manifest again for weeks.
Correct.
Which really surprised me, because I don't think what I was feeling was going to go away if I ignored it.
Yeah. So the blood vessel can occlude partially or fully. And then recantilate or open okay. blood flow.
You need
open
to talk
back.
American, occluding
yeah.
blood
so
vessels. Okay.
the coronary blood vessel, the Thank blood you. Vessel that Sorry. Occludes, that's what causes a heart attack. Okay. So the blood flow is stopped in that blood vessel. It can be partially occluded, fully occluded. If it's fully occluded, it's really bad. You know, that's bad news. Mm-hmm. That's when it's urgent to get it opened quickly. But if it's partially opened and there's just limited flow, you know, rest will usually abate your symptoms, so you don't fully, you know, you're like, oh, I'm better now. I can mm-hmm. wait, you know, wait until something really bad happens. But that is progressive and will come back to haunt you down the road. It's just when that is, nobody can tell. But you can sometimes get resolution of your symptoms. But, you know, and patients come to the emergency room all the time saying, something's not right. I know my body, and I know something's wrong. So it's really understanding your body, because women have completely different symptoms than men. They don't have the crushing substernal chest pain. They might get shortness of breath and nausea. And if they're having nausea and shortness of breath, maybe a little jaw pain, you know, they're like, well, I'm not having chest pain. I'm fine. I can stay at home. And so it's really understanding that the symptoms may be different, and to really understand and listen to your body.
Actually, the fellow that was in a bed next to me in the hospital said his first symptom, which I was startled when he explained this, was actually not in the front of his body at all and did not feel like it was coming from his heart. It actually felt like a skeletal muscular pain in his back and his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And he said that he figured he was going to deal with some incredible muscular problem. And they said, no, you're having a heart attack.
That's very common, you know, pain. And they're all, you know, we hear lots of different stories about chest pain. Some are real, some could be musculoskeletal. But it's really to listen to what the patient's feeling, take it seriously, and, you know, try to, there are a lot of different signs, there are EKG changes and things that we look at to see how things are going. But just to get checked out, I mean, no physician is going to say, don't come back, you know.
It's better to be safe than sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I want to remind you, we're talking about the Heart Association and cardiovascular fitness and issues of cardiology and heart disease and stroke. And we want you to be part of the discussion also. This is KCBX Public Radio. We're glad you're joining us today. You can join us as part of the discussion by giving us a call at 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. And let's see, I think we've got Harold, are you there?
Sure.
Okay, Harold, what are your comments or questions?
Well, I'm closer to 90 than 85, let's put it that way. And I was diagnosed as a cardiovascular patient close to 40 years ago. And I think I did fail a stress test, but I was never a great basketball player, let's put it that way. I was an athlete. Tremendous history of my family, in my family of heart, you know, my father never made it to 60, that kind of a thing. And the questions I have are for those people who are in situations like my, and, you know, I'm a big walker and all those things, okay? Those people who are in the situation that I'm in, you know, we put on all kinds of medicines. And I want to talk about the side effects of these medicines, okay? And I owe my life to the medical profession. A person in my family was a doctor. He also had heart problems, and he's still alive. But he had three stents. I've never had a stent, and I guess if I took another test right now, I wouldn't pass it, the stress test. But, you know, what about the side effects? There are terrific side effects, I feel, of some of the medicines I've been taking over the last 30, 40 years. One of them, of course, is a chronic cough. I don't know if it's the effect of medicine or the fact that there's a lot of dust in my life.
Yeah, Hi, Harold. This is Dr. Porterfield. So the medications all have side effects, unfortunately. You know, the cough most commonly is associated with an ACE inhibitor, just from the production of bradykinin. So if you're on an ACE inhibitor, that is a very common side effect, and that's.
I've recently changed doctors because I've survived. Wonderful guy who took care of me for over 25 years, and retired. They've changed medicine, and I find now I don't seem to have that chronic cough as much. I feel my nasal passages are much better.
Yeah, and that's they probably switched you to a different medication, which helps to alleviate the cough. Statin therapy for cholesterol also, and you know, side effects are about 5% of myalgias and nausea, but they keep people alive, and so they sometimes we deal with the side effects, and sometimes we have to switch you to different drugs. But it looks like they've done well for you. You're alive at your age and doing well.
Okay.
Yeah, they have. Okay. You guys have learned a lot, but I wonder whether or not these machines that give you the stress tests are valid.
Okay. That's a whole other discussion.
Okay. Yeah, that may be a discussion for another day, Harold. Thanks for the call. It's cardiology has changed, obviously, in how you treat things. I mean, among other things, I can tell you what's changed in my perception of cardiology is that the cardiologist that dealt with my father in 1968 was a smoker. He and the two of them used to smoke together while they were talking about his case, which struck me as very strange. That was an era that people believed we didn't know cigarettes were bad for you, but doggone it, we knew cigarettes were bad for you. Yeah. I want to look at a little history because there's a lot of us who are alive that may not have been alive 50 years ago. I'm now older than my father was when he died, but I also didn't have people smuggling cigarettes in the hospital like he did when he died. So we look at things differently, and thankfully we're doing a better job than we were from that standpoint. Let's look at a little history if we can. How long have we been doing bypass surgery? How long have we been putting little Chinese puzzles in people's chest and calling them their stents? They look like the little Chinese finger puzzles, a smaller version. As a cardiologist, you may not prefer that we get referred to that way, but that's the easiest way to describe what they look like. How long have we been doing that?
For a long time. So bypass surgery is quite a long time, since the 60s sometimes even before that. But stents, the 90s, and the stent era has really resurfaced a lot of the things that we can do without having to open the chest and, you know, minimally invasive stuff that really reduces the morbidity and risk.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing for my daughter. I know that we've had the catheterization procedures, which is where they go through the groin or artery and are able to go in through the heart. And we are able to keep her out of open heart surgeries because of that. In fact, next week we are going to have her stent that's placed in her left pulmonary artery ballooned out a little bit, hopefully, in order to continue to grow with her as she's growing with the veins. So Dr. Ng is actually our catheterization doctor. He is fabulous in the stuff that he's been able to do to keep people out of having actual open heart surgeries. It's phenomenal what they're able to do, even for children as well as for adults now.
Well, it's how the catheterization process was not comfortable. Okay, that's the most memorable pain of my heart attack. Okay?
I'll tell Dr. Doria.
But I was not unhappy about it at all. Okay, and the fact that they didn't have to cut me open to do that, I think we're talking about doing a stent and a catheterization in a child a year old or less.
Her very first one, she was.
I started to sweat just
old.
Having you explain that. I'm sorry.
Her first one, she was 3 months old. She had another one at 5 months old. She had another one right after her second open heart surgery, and we will have another one. In fact, she'll probably have one every 6 months until we can have that pulmonary artery fixed, which will be her third open heart surgery, we believe. It's remarkable what they're able to do. I mean, they do so much for our kids to keep them out of actually having open heart surgeries. It's amazing. And no, recovery sometimes isn't fun, but normally even for those, she's only down one day and we're back home. So it truly is amazing. Honestly, I got to be honest with you, pacemaker doctor. my daughter's hardest recovery was actually her pacemaker. And I think because of that abdominal wall, they actually made a pocket for it. Yeah. And that was very hard for her to recover. We were on, speaking of, you know, medicines and stuff, we were actually having her to be on pain medication a lot longer than they want. So we also went through 72 hours of drug withdrawals with a 5 month old. That was probably the worst 3 days of my entire life. I've never been through anything like that. She came home on a drug patch, and you do have to think about the side effects and what's happening with our kids. But, does the length of life and longevity outweigh the side effects of the drugs and the procedures that you're having to do in order to, have that quality of life?
Yeah. There are some surprising things about the drugs that as I got more of an education, I was on a cholesterol-lowering medication before I had a heart attack.
Yeah.
Dr. Doria and my primary care physician both changed that. There was nothing wrong with what I was taking, but one of the things I didn't realize is that along with cutting down the amount of cholesterol buildup, the breaking off of cholesterol in the veins and arteries is affected by the medication.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out a way to explain it. The blockage that I had was probably caused by something that broke off and then got stuck in an area where it was already narrowed, and I was surprised to find out that cholesterol medication in some cases can cut down on that happening again.
Correct.
Which was a pleasant surprise, because I thought, gee whiz, if I can cut the cholesterol out of my diet enough, I can just not take cholesterol medicine and everything will be hunky-dory. And the answer I got was, well, that may be okay, but there's some benefits you get from that medicine that people didn't realize. So it's an educational process, and Emily, I think what you probably do every day is giving people a better understanding of what they can do and what parts of this they can take on and what can make a difference. There's an awful lot of us that still don't understand what the connection is between high blood pressure and heart disease. And I think that's my biggest question. And I guess who wants to jump in to try and explain that one first?
I can give you a little bit of it, okay. And then I'll shoot it to Emily. But if you can imagine, your heart is built to withstand a certain amount of pressure. And we as Americans like to eat certain things with increased sodium or things that increase our weight. And the heart is becoming an inefficient pump based on either increased fluid retention, so more water in the veins, in the blood vessels, and your heart's having to pump against more resistance because we are overweight. And so that constant battle between the heart and the blood vessels is causing stretching of the blood vessels. Increasing deposits of cholesterol in the blood vessels causes other things to occur. So you get a lot of different changes that occur with high blood pressure. And then patients end up having all the complications that we know about when you have heart disease, you also have plaque everywhere else. So your carotid arteries causing your high risk for stroke, plaque in the blood vessels in your legs, all those things that increase your risk of other bad things happening. So just having a heart attack doesn't reduce your risk of having other things. So you also have to look at your other factors that can really influence your risk for stroke and other bad things that occur.
Yeah. Emily, do we look at the things that cause strokes and the things that cause heart attacks as pretty much the same family, but do we end up ignoring strokes maybe as we look at things related mostly to heart attacks?
For the Heart Association, we're actually the Heart Association and the Stroke Association,
okay.
American Stroke Association. So they are related. I'm not a medical professional, so I can't really talk to that.
Okay.
I don't want to misrepresent myself. So, but definitely the same family, and we're really trying to get the stroke awareness out there as well. We've actually reduced it nationwide as the number 5 killer, so we're happy about that.
Well, my understanding – now, I wasn't quite sure. Is it a high – it's the third most common killer in San Luis County. Is that because of the overall age of the population?
It's an older group of people. And, heart disease is number 2. We're in Slo County, but number 1 nationally.
Okay.
So but it's, I think, just based on the population and demographics.
Okay, we have a call. Let me guess. Oh, let's see. Taylor, are you there?
I am.
Okay. What are your questions or comments?
I have 3 issues with my heart. And when I was a younger teen, I went to a cardiologist. Basically, took quite a few tests that had some interesting results. And they had basically told me, don't drink energy drinks. And now that I'm older and still experiencing those issues, my wife seems to think that not drinking energy drinks clearly didn't do any advantage for me.
Okay. Any comment about energy drinks, Chris?
Yeah, so the energy drinks have high caffeine and a lot of sugar. And so I'm assuming that the cardiologist that saw you back then was talking about some type of tachycardia or fast heartbeat that would be initiated by the caffeine. And so reducing the caffeine intake would reduce the likelihood of you having a fast heart rate. I'm not sure about what's going on now, but it sounds like, you know, that was some type of fast heart rhythm issue that you were having as a kid. And that it usually resolves by reducing the amount of caffeine. That sometimes does not resolve, and that requires you to see someone like me who's a heart rhythm specialist, or I call myself an electrician of the heart. So,
okay.
One of the main issues I have is really sleeping on my back. When I'm on my back for about a half hour, there's quite an intense pain in my heart, and I will go, you know, 3 or 4 months without taking a sip of any energy drink, and that problem never seems to clear itself up.
Yeah, that probably requires further investigation to try to figure out what's actually causing that.
Yeah, I don't know what Chris can say, but my suggestion to you, Harold, is right, Taylor, is to please go visit your physician soon and ask the same question.
All righty. Well, thank you very
much. Okay, thanks very much. Yeah, and that stuff, I'm sure you probably run into that at cocktail parties. You run into it at restaurants. It's like, you know, I hadn't really noticed this thing, and I got this funny pain, and should I go see somebody? Yeah. I think the recurring theme is
yes.
You can walk out of an emergency room knowing you didn't belong there.
Correct.
Okay, and that becomes a big factor. Is that something that you see a lot, and that is people that you flat out have to say to, I wish you'd seen me a year ago?
Yeah, it's all the time. I tell that to people on a daily basis, if not two or three times a day, saying, you know, if I could have seen you even last week or, you know, 15 days ago or 2 years ago, that, you know, things that we can do to help prevent this. Because when you have a heart attack, you form a scar. There's part of the heart that dies. Our goal is to try to get the tissue back, and so that you have a very small amount of tissue death. But that small amount of tissue death can cause problems down the road. And so we're trying to prevent and keep everyone's heart as healthy as possible.
Okay. Emily, there's something we didn't really hit on this specifically. There's something with regard to strokes called FAST. Can you define that and explain that and what that means?
So FAST, it's an acronym. The F is it's the signs of a stroke. So the F stands for facial, if your face is drooping or if your friend's face is drooping. The A is arm weakness or soreness. S is speech impediment. And T stands for time. It's time to call 911. And we really do stress, call 911. Don't drive yourself to the hospital.
I saw that in the notes that you shared with me two or three times, which is don't drive yourself to the hospital.
All the time.
Are you serious? That's crazy. I'm sorry, but that's crazy. I
was startled
imagine.
To hear that. Yeah,
and I had a gallbladder attack, and I barely could get myself out to the front door, so I couldn't imagine I'm having a stroke.
Oh yeah,
that's crazy.
All the time.
Okay. For strokes, probably you have it for heart attacks also then sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. They drive, and the bad part about the driving is not just that you're in pain, but if you black out or pass out or lose of any function, you can't drive your car, and then you could put someone else into harm. Mm-hmm. And right. So that's why you need to call 911.
Well, and plus you'll be first on the list once you get to the hospital.
You don't have to wait.
Well, that is kind of a
big deal.
True.
Yeah.
You'll be – okay. I have to clarify that. So walk-ins are generally it would be reasonable. If you walk in under your own steam, you're seen as less of a critical emergency.
Correct. You have to be triaged. But you when a nurse looks at you and says, oh, yeah, you look like you're having a stroke, you're going to be obviously put into a bed. But an ambulance gets priority because you're deemed an emergency.
Okay. As we look at what's going on, is there anything that we're not doing as a society that we should be paying attention to? I mean, it's in an ideal world, I guess it's probably to all three of you, but probably focused on Chris because he's the person who sees what the cause and effect is on a more of a daily basis. Is there anything towards dealing with heart attack and stroke that if we could get society to do, we should, but it's just like, okay, there's no way we're ever going to get there?
I think we'll get there. We have really seen a push over the last 10 years to go from a secondary prevention to primary prevention society. We still have leaps and bounds to go, but and what I mean by primary prevention is really getting it before it happens and reducing your risks, understanding your risks. You know, diabetes, obesity are huge factors that we have a lot of influence on. And if we even losing 3 to 5 pounds can greatly diminish your risks. Our real goals of trying to reduce your risk of heart disease, stopping smoking, losing weight and exercise, all of us can do it. Not that all of us want to do it all the time, but it is. There's a very small steps that we can each just do on a daily basis that can really reduce our risks.
Okay. We have another call we'll grab real quick here. Lisa, you're on. Go ahead.
What are you doing? Oh, yes. Hi. Okay. I just had a question. You guys were talking about, you know, the reasons for calling 911 and getting an ambulance. I was curious if our counties are set up with a STEMI system of care.
What was the, what kind of care?
STEMI.
A STEMI system. So when you have a certain kind of heart attack, if our ambulances have the equipment to care for STEMI heart attacks, so when you get to the hospital, they're ready to receive you.
Correct. Okay. Slo County is a STEMI county.
Okay, so that's a procedure. So the
EMS,
the communication that goes on. Yeah.
Yeah, they do an EKG. They tell the hospital prepare for STEMI.
Yeah, and that's understandable. The EMTs were communicating with the hospital before I ever left my house. The Atascadero Fire Department EMTs and the ambulance people were communicating because the decision as to whether or not I could go to a cardiac care hospital that was 10 miles further away than going to the nearest hospital became a factor. I was very impressed with the dialogue and how that went on. We're getting kind of towards the end of the program, and I want to make sure we don't leave anything out, I guess. Jocelyn, this is a topic that is probably closer to you than it is to any of us from a standpoint. You're dealing with a child that doesn't even understand what's wrong with them yet. Maybe they do, but I mean their ability to communicate with that. This has been an educational process for you, of course. What are your thoughts about how things are going and how things need to go?
On a personal note of where things are going, I think that as a society, sometimes we think that bringing awareness to something as easy as just like putting a Facebook post out there or possibly even a monetary donation. But a lot of times it's not so much about, awareness. It's actually about taking action. And there are ways to take action. I mean, I've got about $1 million in medical bills right now. I call her my $1 million baby. So me monetary just obviously isn't an option for us right now. But there are so many other ways that you can get involved. We are actually supposed to be at Children's Hospital this week, so we weren't going to be able to participate in the heart walk, but her procedure got rescheduled. So the first thing I did was called Emily and said, what can I do to help? Let me volunteer. Because even if you can't walk, or even if you're, don't want to put a heart team together, or you don't want to try to have to fundraise, it is one of those things that you really do, there really are a lot of things that you can do that, obviously aren't about fundraising, that you can just get involved other ways and help and make a difference. So don't think that you have to fork over money in order to bring awareness to something.
Okay, I want to jump in. We have a call from Valerie with a question about the issue of diabetes, I guess. You're on the air. Go ahead, Valerie.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yes, I just wanted to make a point that when we talk about diabetes, I heard the doctor mention that just losing a few pounds can really help. And I wanted to point out that there is a growing population of Americans who are perfectly, quote, thin and healthy, who are getting diabetes. I contracted, you don't contract diabetes, developed type 1 when I was 42 years old. I was an athlete, about 5'7", 125 pounds. And I began having problems with my vision. I had urinary tract. I got infection. I was very tired. I think there was some other third symptom.
Yes.
And the first, my primary care doctor checked me for urinary tract infection and said, well, you have high blood sugar.
Yes, and that's I should have been more clear. And I was talking about, that's why I said type 2 diabetes, but type 1, adult onset type 1 is a growing population and is not due to the adipose tissue blocking your glycemic control. So type 1 adult onset is much different than type 2, which is the more common disorder.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Valerie. Okay. Emily, we'll give you a shot. Okay, so I guess what is it that you really want to make sure we all don't forget today?
I mean, the one thing, because I feel like actually I blew it a little bit ago, mylifecheck.com. It's the easiest website to remember, and
of course,
I forgot it. Okay. Yeah, mylifecheck.com, and that will actually address some of the callers' questions about the stuff that they eat or drink, how much exercise they're doing. It covers all of that and gives you a score at the end. If you have too many sugary sweet drinks, they're going to ding you at the end, actually. Sorry for those out there. Also, our heart walks. I do want to just mention that we do have our heart walk coming up this Saturday in Avila at 9. Starting at 9 is registration. And then we have one in Santa Barbara at Fess Parker. On September the 24th, and then October 3rd, we have one in Monterey County, so you can get all of that information.
Okay, and there's a program in Paso Robles in October, I guess, something to do with
Saving strokes. Yeah, it's a golf clinic for stroke survivors. It's a free clinic, thanks to Sierra Vista Hospital, who is the sponsor of that.
Okay. Chris, you sort of get the last word. I have to do the exit of the show, but what do you want to, if you could just talk to everybody who might have a heart attack, what is the one thing that you want them to make sure they pay attention to and don't forget?
Just understand your risk, understand the symptoms of a heart attack. If you have risk factors that you can modify them, and seek help. I mean, there are a ton of people out there that know a lot more about this that can help you on a day-to-day basis, and any physician will want to talk to you and help you out. We are all out there trying to reduce the risks of patients and reduce their heart risk factors.
Yeah. You're part of a large practice. There's an awful lot of cardiologists in this county, which means there's an awful lot of us that need the attention.
Correct.
I'm sure you would prefer to not to be as busy as you are. It's an office when I walk into, there's always a lot of people there in need of attention.
We all enjoy what we do, and we all enjoy meeting new people. And I'm the only electrophysiologist, so I tend to see a lot of interesting people and a lot of nice people, and have really enjoyed my time here.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. I want to remind you all that this has been Central Coast Voices. We've been talking about a very interesting and important topic today, and that's heart attacks, strokes, heart fitness, a topic and a side of this that we really didn't know was a factor, and that is that children who are born with heart problems that they have to address, and that's a surprising area to talk about. This is Central Coast Voices. I want to remind you that it's a production of Action for Healthy Communities, which is a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be your host, and she'll be speaking with Wendy Wundt, who's the executive director of First Five San Luis Obispo, the Children's and Family Commission. Margaret Kinsling Klopfer, the Youth Services Coordinator Librarian for the LA County, San Luis Obispo County Library, and Melinda Skoloski, who's the Family Support Services Manager for Community Action Partners of San Luis Obispo. They're going to talk about Raising America, a new and compelling documentary that's out that's going to look at what we do for children and infants in early ages that will affect their development and their activity both in school and life to come. And that should be a great program. Central Coast Voices, as I told you, is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities. We want to thank them and the collaboration of KCBX to having this program with us. This program is also underwritten by a grant from Joan Gallart Sargent. If you want to share your information and questions or suggestions for programs, you can contact us at voices@kcbx.org or give us a call at 543-2323. Thanks again to my guest today, Chris Parkerfield, Jocelyn Skelton, and Emily Renault. And it's been a great program, and I thank you for joining us. And stay tuned for This American Life next on KCBX.